Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Sabah. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the UDRP domain name Lock Working Group on the 21st of February 2013. On the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Matt Schneller, Christine Durain, Luke Pfeiffer, Laurie Anderson, Michaela Nalen, and Faisal Shah. David Roche-Turner will be joining us shortly. We have apologies from David Mann, Gabriela Schlack, Lisa Garano, Hugo DeFallo, and Sheila Lehrman. From staff, we have Marika Koenig, Barry Cobb, and myself, Natalie Pergin. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Nikhil.
Thanks. Good afternoon, or good morning, or good evening, depending on which time zone you're in. As per usual, are there any updates to people's statements of interest or anything else that they want to raise at this juncture? Going once, going twice. Okay, grand. We have a very poor turnout this afternoon, which makes me sad, sad face. But that's okay. We have a couple of things that we need to kind of move forward with because, well, we have to move forward. So, we have the latest version of the Straw Man, which incorporates the comments and everything from last week, I believe. Is that correct, Marika?
Yeah, it is, Marika. What is up, indeed, I went through the transcript, and hopefully Barry provided me as well with some notes from last week's meeting. So I've updated the Straw Man accordingly. So there's still some red lines in there that reflect changes from last week's call. And then there's some additional comments I added in listening to or going through the transcript and also looking at some of the language, some questions that came to my mind that we may want to discuss.
Okay. Thank you, Marika. All right, then. Now, in terms of times and everything else, we will be having a meeting in Beijing. I probably actually should know the answer to this. On the provisional, there is a provisional schedule floating around somewhere, I think, that I saw something about. When will the actual schedule be published for that, Marika? Do we know roughly which day we are? I think you said something previously, and I've forgotten what it was.
This is Marika. We had a deadline of yesterday to put in our meeting request. So I've currently requested Thursday, 11th of April, from 9 to 11:30 local time. But as there's still, we still now need to look at all the requests that have come in and all of the main sessions where they fit in. So there may still be some movement to make sure that there, as little conflict as possible. But that is in principle the time we've requested.
Okay. Just out of interest for those of you on this call, okay, I know I will be there. Alan, I assume, will be there. Christine, Laurie, Luke, will you be attending Beijing?
This is Christine. I won't be there.
We will miss you.
Well, thank you. I'll miss you, too.
Yeah,
this is Laurie. I won't be there.
Oh, sorry.
Laurie, do they ever let you out of Arizona?
No.
Oh, okay. Do I need to raise this with James as a matter of urgency? Please let her out, or are you happy to be stuck in Arizona?
You can talk to James about it if you wish.
Okay. So I hear you're having snow in Arizona, which is supposedly a freak of nature or something. Monsieur Luc, will you be joining us in Beijing?
I don't have a visa. Yeah, I'm still right. Struggling to get a visa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Somebody's posting something in Flemish about us, and I can't read it. So I'll have to send a link to Marika and go, Marika, please translate quick. The visa thing, I'm not sure. I gather from speaking to a few people that they've got them sorted out completely, whereas other people are still stuck in whatever the seventh level of hell trying to get it sorted out. I think it depends on which country you're in. Anyway, we will be hopefully presenting something something tangible to the community in Beijing. And I believe that our timelines are quite compressed in terms of the document deadlines. Marika, was there something about the document deadline being updated or compressed or something for Beijing that you mentioned?
Yeah, this is Marika. Fadi has asked internally people to try and get documents ready by, I think, the 8th of March. But I think that's partly relating as well to documents that are within staff's control. So really documents that we are writing and you know, it's within our remit to get that done by the date or not. I'm not really sure if it also applies to community documents, because, of course, there are more people working on those. And in principle, you know, the official deadline for that is I think 15 business days before the start of an ICANN meeting, which was adopted some time ago by the ICANN board, which would put us at the 15th of March. So I think at this stage we're still working towards the 15th of March deadline, but obviously if you know, we have things ready before that, that would be great too. And just to note as well that the session itself, because I know in the past we've had more face-to-face working group sessions, I think the idea of this session is really to actually present the report to the community and also allow for discussion or comments and questions and encourage people to respond to the public comment forum, which we'll have open by that same time, so to allow people to direct them in that regard.
Okay, thanks, Marika. So ideally what we want to do is just, you know, lock down this document that we currently have. You know, it's... We're going to get people commenting on this saying that they like it. We're going to get people commenting on it saying they absolutely hate it. Of course, we could be met with deathly silence, but I suspect that won't be the case. So, you know, it's an initial report. You know, there'll be feedback, and that's probably what we need. So what we need to do really is to try and push forward in terms of getting this done. So we're going to try and go through some of the stuff today on this call. I might not be able to make the call next week because I will be somewhere weird in, I don't know, somewhere in Los Angeles or something. But I mean, there's a, you know, there is a mailing list, people. We can use that as well, and I know some of you have been doing that. Okay, then. So, the straw man, we have that there. That's been circulated to you all as well. There's lots and lots of comments and notes, in the margin. So, you know, if there's anything people have questions about, anything people want to provide extra input on, you know, please, you know, speak up. Now, one of the areas that we see, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I don't know why. It's not kind of odd. Okay, one of the things on the agenda today, item number three, definition of lock. In the straw man proposal, we define lock in this context as preventing any changes of registrar and registrant. So does more work need to be done with this different definition, or should we just create an additional recommendation that provides this definition? Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Maybe to remind everyone, I think that at the beginning of our work, we actually started looking at some draft definitions that I think Christine and other people, and I think commented as well, started preparing. But at some point, I think we said, okay, let's maybe leave that behind and first start working on this, because maybe it will be self-explanatory what we consider a lock in this context. So the question here is indeed, do we need to go back to that original definition, which I think was broader than just preventing changes of registrar and registrant? Or looking at the strawman proposal, is our definition of a lock in this context indeed just preventing changes of registrar and registrant? Then another question that we, I think, raised initially is that, of course, instead of saying, you know, preventing certain changes, is it possible as well to associate that directly with current EPP statuses? I'm definitely no expert on EPP statuses, but I had a look at the descriptions, and the only one I could specifically find is the one that prevents changes of registrar. I didn't see a lock that only prevents changes of registrant, so I'm not sure if that is even an option we can consider. And at this stage, we'll just need to leave it like that until the time there would be a specific law that either prevents both changes or one of them. That's basically the question I think we still need to address or haven't spelled out in the draft recommendations or the initial report.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Alan, and then, me. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I will remind the group that I did promise to come up with a list of all the who is statuses and sort of a table of what you can do at which time, and I have started doing that. It should be ready before next week.
All right. Thank you, Alan.
It's not going to be all that helpful because most anything you can change at some point, and, you know, if there's, as we've discussed on the change of registrant associated with privacy and proxy services, you know, most any of the critical fields can be changed, you know, if you believe you're changing it for the right reason. But registrants will not be able to change them unilaterally, so I think that's a lot of the issue. Not so much they can't be changed, but who can't change them. Anyway, I'm going to try to have something for the group. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Just with respect to EPP, as far as I'm aware, okay, locking a domain to prevent transfer between registrars, that's fine. That's not really an issue. I mean, there's multiple EPP locks that one can apply, different depending on what you want to do, which can block a domain from transferring. But as far as I'm aware, there isn't anything really in EPP to stop a change of registrant, because in .com and .net, as they're thin, it's the registrar that holds the whois data. It's got nothing really to do with EPP. I mean, sure, you might transmit it via EPP, but it's not as if VeriSign ever actually gets that. Now, somebody might want to correct me. Oh, good afternoon, Faisal Shah. How art thou? Somebody could correct me on that, but that's my understanding of it. So unless there was something new within EPP, I don't think we can actually use that for that purpose. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, this is Christine from NAF. I just wanted to make two comments. One was just anecdotally, I noticed that when we currently request a lock, we just ask the registrar to prevent, you know, changes and to lock the domain name. And then the registrar, I don't know what you've talked about in the past 2 weeks, but I know we've talked about maybe defining it not in terms of what the EPP status is or the code is, but in terms of what the function is, so that the registrars can do their own thing, and maybe someone can jump in and tell me that you've hashed this all out in the last 2 weeks. But so it might be more functional to just say what can and can't happen versus what the actual code is. And my second comment is just, I know we're on that specifically comment number 4, but I wanted to just go back up and say the blue box, the second blue box on the left still says one business day, even though I think you've changed most of the recommendations to say 2 business days. I mean, I think that was in deference. Volker and Luke were concerned about not having, or at least Volker was not having time to or to reveal the proxy or privacy service, and so we had talked about changing it to 2 business days, but the box on the left still says 1, so I just didn't know if that was a discrepancy or if there was something that I missed there as well. So those are just 2 comments that I had.
Thanks, Christine. And Marika notes in the chat there's just a discrepancy. Anything else further on this? I mean, okay, what do people want to do? I mean, do we want to go down the route of talking about what the lock should do? I mean, how this, and as Berin points out, actually the term lock itself could be misleading, as EPP codes do not label it as a lock. True, there's client hold and various other things. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika, and maybe just as an explanation, we can say, because we do talk about lock, and I think it has been, you know, it is used as well. Well, Christine is saying that that's what they request as well, registrars to lock. So maybe if in this context we just clarify that in the context of this document and this report, lock means preventing changes of registrant and registrar. And then it basically is up to the registrar to decide or define how they do that, which, you know, EPP codes they apply or what other, you know, locks they may use. But I think for the discussion now, or at least that's what we currently have in recommendation two, that the what needs to be prevented by the registrar is changes of registrar and registrant. And if indeed that is the agreement, maybe we should just leave it at that. And again, it's an issue we can, or an item we can come back to or ask for further input on as part of the initial report.
Okay. Christine, I assume that's an old hand? And
yes,
working
I'm
on
sorry. It is a vestigial hand of lore.
That's okay. It's okay. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. As long as the term lock is only used in a single meaning, then my inclination would be to keep the word and perhaps note to the next UDRP group that does the overall review that perhaps they should come up with another term. But, you know, if it's very, very, if we feel there's a strong reason for not using lock or we have conflicting uses of the same word, then maybe we need to change it. But otherwise, my inclination would be to not change it, you know, unless there's some compelling reason.
Yeah, I agree, Alan. This is Christine, and I think that Marika's suggestion of defining the term early on so we all know what that means is great. And I just wanted to just interrupt briefly to say that in my recollection, and I'm home, so I don't have the UDRP open in front of me like I normally do, but I do not believe that the UDRP says the word lock anywhere. It does say prevention of transfer.
Okay. In that case, we're perhaps free to use to define a word if we choose to.
Right.
Lock tends to be a binary thing of, you know, open or closed, so my inclination is not to use lock if we have a choice of words, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm frantically searching my mail to see if I can find a notification from either WIPO or NAF. Of course, this is typical. My inbox, I can find plenty of references to WIPO, but none of the ones that are of any use to me. I suppose the question is, what is the wording that is used on the in the notification email that gets sent to registrars? Because, of course, I can't find one now that I want to find one.
If you just look for the word verification, we call it verification.
Okay, let me just... I'll try that. It's just the amount of email I have is... Oh, God. Sorry, I just did verification. That was not a good choice. Bear me one second. I'm just trying to find an example of the actual wording, because I'm trying to understand where the term lock is used and why this is causing us problems, I suppose. Okay, ignore me. I'll come back to that. Okay, so Alan's suggesting that maybe we just leave it as it is and look at changing the wording further on. But Alan, obviously, you want the practical usage of it to be defined.
I think so, and hopefully the table I provide, as modified by the group, will you know, give us that ability.
Okay.
Our end result may not be a table; it may be able to be summarized in very small number of words. But I think the table will help us get to that path, get to that position.
This is Christine. I think the other sort of benefit of defining the term is that it will help people understand that we're not going outside the scope of the UDRP, because the UDRP sort of functionally describes a lock without using the word, you know, talking about what changes can't happen. And so I think that many people who feel like maybe they might be prevented from feeling like our recommendations go above and beyond if our definition is really in line with the UDRP. I think it will actually help get buy-in as well.
Okay. I think there's a couple of emails from you, Christine. I'm going to bring up one of them here from a while back with lock definition from earlier this year. Let's see. One second. Where's the... Okay, there's one from Mass, which goes into a statement like the following: register may not permit changes to, etc., etc. And there's another one, some feedback from you, so maybe working from that. What is Marika saying to me? Okay, then. So other comments on the straw man. Okay, which one were we up to now? I've lost where I am on this.
This is Marika. I think we've actually gone to item 4 in the agenda, but in item 3, I was just trying to point out that maybe when we're done with the definition discussion, we can actually go back to item 3 and look at some of the comments that are still in the straw man. So I didn't mean to distract you.
Sorry, the problem is for those of you who aren't aware, I've got about 25 members of my staff all IMing me separate things simultaneously, kind of going, you know, we're being sued. We're going, what? Okay. So that just the usual kind of distractions, things coming into me from various different places. And Marika kind of sending me IMs about certain things, which confuses me even further. Okay. On the definition side, my own personal thoughts on this would be, if we collect together the working definitions that were submitted to the list and that we discussed in previous meetings and just put them all into one document and just say something like, here's a bunch of, you can't say here's a bunch, doesn't sound right, more formally, the working group in its deliberations discussed possible definitions for the term lock, and some of the possible definitions provided were as follows, or something like that. Marika, you have a hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika, because actually those definition discussions date back from, I think, September last year, and those actually went, I think, much further than what we currently have in the straw man. Because, for example, I have the document up here where we started was basically saying the registrar shall restrict all changes to the registrar on data, including the data displayed in the publicly available WHOIS database, and including transfer and deletion of domain names, as well as the name servers on which the name is hosted. Well, I think where if you look at the actual straw man, what we're saying is the only changes we're requiring to be prevented are changes of registrar and registrant, which would be a very straightforward definition. So I'm not really sure bringing back those older definitions, whether that will basically mean we need to revise the straw man because we're saying something different there. I don't know if at this stage we can go for the more straightforward definition that we actually have in the straw man, or whether, and maybe it's something to put out on the mailing list so people can actually think about it, whether more needs to be added beyond what we currently say needs to be prevented in the straw man proposal.
Okay. Anybody have any strong feelings about this? Any thoughts? Have I managed to make something more complicated than necessary? Is Marika's suggestion simpler and better? Anybody? Okay, then let's, working on the basis that silence equals assent, I'm going to suggest then that we go with Marika's suggestion, we totally ignore mine, and that we classify me as an idiot for the purposes of this afternoon, and I do apologize. Okay, then. Going back over to the notes. Dear God, what if people would stop IMing me? Going back to the notes on here, there's a couple of queries, I think. So, for example, on page 1... Okay, go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Basically, you're reviewing the transcript in line as well with the comments that were discussed last week and looking at some of the language or some questions that came to my mind. So the first one is comment one on page one in relation to draft recommendation number two. So my question is there is, do we actually need to specifically include that the registrar may or must notify the registrant as soon as possible following the application of the lock? I think there was a comment that that we from staff made in saying that there may be a time gap between the registrar locking the domain name, confirming that with the UDRP provider, and the UDRP provider then notifying the registrant. There may be a situation then where the registrant sees that their domain name is locked, but they don't know why or what for. So do we need to specifically call out here that at the moment that the domain name is actually locked, the registrar may or must tell the registrant that it has been locked for the reason that a UDRP has been filed or is pending?
Okay. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, my inclination is to say may. It's a matter of customer relations whether the registrar wants to or not. Having an unhappy customer is the registrar problem. All we're saying is they must not tell them until. I can't see a reason for saying the registrar must. You're not going to be able to use that notification going back and, you know, using it in a court to prove that they were notified at a certain date. I don't think that's up to the provider. So I wouldn't put a must there unless there's some compelling reason to do it.
Just Michele speaking as a registrar, I would be supportive of what Alan just said. I think we should have the ability to do things without having to inform the registrant at certain times. So, I mean, in some cases, obviously, we want to inform them. In other cases, we may not want to inform them. I mean, one example I can think of is where we might be aware of pending legal actions or potential legal actions involving a domain name or domain names, and we might wish to lock the domains against changes, but don't want to inform the registrant immediately. Of course, some people may hate me for doing that, but I'm sure other registrars probably do similar enough things. Okay. Any other comments on this?
It's Alan. The other reason it's not a formal comment is, again, if you're aware that this is a registrant with some suspicious goings-on or whatever, you know, you have no real desire to have them involved in the process until they are absolutely, you know, have to be. So, again, I see no reason to force a registrar to do this and then have to set deadlines under which they must do it, because immediately is not a really defined term. So I think it's cleaner to just leave it as it is.
Alan, are you being nice to registrars?
I'm starting to channel for registrars. Haven't you noticed?
Yeah, I'm actually getting quite worried about this. You might lose your ALAC badge if you're not careful.
I've already lost that from the perception of some people. I hate to invoke the past, but I did this a lot on the Pedner group. You guys just weren't listening.
Please don't mention Pedner, my poor head.
You realize
I bear the scars.
It's still not implemented.
I know. That's a conversation we can have offline.
Actually,
don't go there.
I think the deadline passed yesterday for giving the comments on it, which I didn't.
The registrar stakeholder group will be passing comments on to ICANN staff. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. I think that maybe, you know, hearing the comments, maybe as a clarification, we can just add to that sentence, say basically, but may contact the registrants after changes have been prevented, to at least clarify that, you know, as soon as they have done it, they can communicate with the registrants or explain if there are questions or if they come back and saying, well, you know, why is there a lock on my domain? Then maybe looking ahead at the next comment, which is comment two in relation to draft recommendation four, this is following a change that was discussed at the last meeting to clarify or further define what verification means, as is also a term which I believe is not where in the UDRP or the UDRP rules. So what I've done is basically craft a footnote trying to explain it. I found some language, I think, on the WIPO website that indicates what kind of information is requested. So this is a specific question, I think, to Christine and as well David, if when he joined, whether this language accurately reflects what is being asked. And I don't know if it would be of interest as well in having maybe as part of the annex of the report, include an example of how such a verification request looks like.
Marika, this is just Michele here. Just as chair, I would strongly urge the inclusion of an example notification, either in the body or in the annex, because I think it's something that until you get one, you probably don't know what the hell it looks like. So I'd be very supportive of that.
Christine, is that something you would be able to send me so I can include it in the annex?
Yes, this is Christine. We absolutely would be able to do that, and I agree that I think that the more people see the letter and realize, you know, they get familiarity with it, I think that would be great. And if David also wants to send something so people can see sort of the how they're slightly different, that would be fine too. I don't object to that at all, although I note that our letters are really similar.
They're almost identical, aren't they? I mean, is there much of a difference between the two?
You know, I think if they're identical or close, it's only because it's functional. I don't know that I've ever actually seen their letter until I was at the meeting where I joined this working group, and David presented his letter. So if they are similar, it's purely coincidental, actually.
Well, he's not here to defend his honor, so we better leave him alone. But
they were providers first, so we would be the ones guilty of copying them probably anyway, if there were any copying.
Well, it's I think, what is it, plagiarism's the best form of something? I can't remember what the expression is.
That's right.
Flattery. Thank you, Barry. I knew it was a word. I'm having problems with words and sentences and stuff. Okay, then. Moving on. Okay, so we've agreed on that, putting it in. I mean, one of the things, just, you know, as a note, I mean, I think I've said this already, but I mean, there's a lot of this stuff is missing from the ICANN website if you are a registrar. It's kind of, I don't know, it's assumed that people know these things, but it's not, don't take it for granted. Okay, next bit here. Marika notes that go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a note in relation to draft recommendation number 5, which was discussed at the last meeting, that there was, I think, agreement to change 3 calendar days to business days. But again, I think this is one, I think then a second item where we will be looking for a specific change to the UDRP rules. I just wanted to call that out. But I think in addition with the notification at the moment the UDRP starts, this would be another item which would require a change to the UDRP rules, as I understand it.
Okay. Hold on a second. Slow down. If we clarify this, is this going to cause a problem if we want this specifically stating business days? Is this going to cause a massive problem with scope?
This is Marika. I think, as we're saying, it's a targeted change to clarify, and indeed, if there's no disagreement, I don't think it goes against our scope. It's more a question of whether people would disagree with it and are of the opinion that no changes should be made to the rules. But if I understand correctly, I think on the last call that UDRP providers also agreed that this would be a helpful clarification, actually brings it in line with the other mentions of business days instead of calendar days.
Okay, Christine has her hand up. Go ahead, Christine. And then we have Alan.
Hi, we're looking at draft recommendation 5, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
We're looking at the notes in the right-hand column.
Correct. So my comment is, while I support changing the change to business days because that would make our life a lot easier, you know, we currently have been functioning for 12 years under calendar days, and if that's going to cause heartburn by a lot of people, I know, like you said, I hopefully I'm not reinventing the wheel from the past 2 weeks of discussion, but I am. That's not the hill I'm about to die on in this working group, I guess, is my point. So if we need to change it back to calendar days, I'm just not prepared to fight that battle today. We've been doing 3 calendar days for 12 years.
Okay. So you've been doing 3 calendar days, but you don't mind changing to 3 business days?
Correct.
Okay, grand. And Mr. Wipo has joined the call, so we have to stop saying nasty things about him. Alan, go ahead.
David, I don't know if David was here for that little part of the discussion. The rationale for changing it is if people right now are not able to meet the deadlines, or it is difficult, or it's a tight squeeze, or something like that, then it's one of the things associated with making lock work and work according to the specifications. So it's reasonable to change. If nobody is having it, but we think it should be done to clean things up, then it's questionable. But if there are any aspect of it which is not, where people are not making deadlines right now, or it's difficult to implement, then I think it's wholly is within our scope. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Mr. Turner, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Michaeli, and hello, everybody, and I'm very sorry for my extremely late arrival to
the... Oh, don't worry, look, I was late as well, and I'm chairing the call. Don't worry about it, you're grand.
Great, we can share our guilds. Listen, I just wanted to add briefly on that discussion about the question of whether we have business or calendar days. I'd just like to indicate, we, from WIPO's perspective, are quite happy with the days as they are enumerated currently. And we, I suppose, like NAF, have been doing this under the dates as the days as they are currently enumerated for some period of years, and they work pretty well for us, as we've indicated in some of the earlier calls. There has been some discussion over the last couple of weeks about whether there could be certain changes made to certain aspects of the rules to accommodate preferences that have been expressed by some of the registrars to move from calendar to business days in certain key respects. And to the extent that there would be modifications that would accommodate those expressed registrar needs, we certainly would have no objection to some corresponding modifications made to some of the provider obligations in that light. But I think it's important to be clear that from our perspective, we're not seeking them. And I do think that there is some validity to the point that Christine just made, which is that if we do go making modifications to key dates under the UDRP rules, there is a risk of there being some resulting uncertainty from a user perspective in the way that the mechanism operates going forward, and that's something that we do need to be conscious of, I think.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next notes what we've been discussing.
Yeah, this is Marika. Can I then just ask for clarification? So do people feel that we leave business days in and just see and respond to the initial report whether this is perceived an issue, and if it is, we just go back to calendar days, or do people feel that let's not even go there and just change it back to calendar days? What is the preference here?
It's Alan. I would suggest that whether we keep it as calendar days and note somewhere that there has been discussion of changing it to business days, or vice versa, we change it and say, but it was business days, I think we note in our preliminary report that we would recommend, if we want to do this, we would recommend going to everything in business days, because then it's all consistent with each other, but it is the registrar delays because of varied business practices around the world where the calendar day is more problematic than the business day. So in other words, put it out for comment, essentially asking for input in the preliminary report, whether the community believes it's something we should change for uniformity or leave the two different ones because we're only changing the ones where we really have impact on the implementation of the lock procedure.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Christine.
Yes, this is Christine from NAF. I just wanted to say I agree with Alan, and I would focus the comment or the explanation for why we're suggesting the change to business days on the suggestion, the point that when you're giving the provider, when you're giving the registrars 2 business days to lock, what you're essentially doing is you are possibly eating up all of the time that the sorry, I got a fuzzing baby here. You're essentially eating up all of the time that the provider has to do the deficiency check, and so changing it to 3 business days gives the provider that 3rd business day to do their deficiency check. So I think, you know, if we offer that explanation right up front, it won't seem like we're just trying to bring the UDRP in line with these business day practices or streamline things or make things more consistent, but we're actually identifying the problem that we've, in essence, created. So when we say we're locking, or the registrar has 2 business days to lock, we all know that 2 business days could, in some cases, eat up the full 3 calendar days that the provider has. So we're trying to make sure that the provider has time to do the deficiency check. So I understand that. Alan reminds me of that part as to why we would have wanted to make that change. So I think that if we clarify as to why we're making that suggestion, people will be less likely to object or protest just on pure, fundamental, don't change the UDRP, grounds.
Alan?
Yeah, that sounds like a compelling reason to me. I hadn't realized that aspect of it, that the two timings were overlapped and were linked. But if potentially elongating the business days on the registrar starts giving the provider a tight time, and you know, in any given case, you may not know exactly what the business days of the provider are, especially as we go to registrars and registries, if that becomes relevant, in places, you know, where you may not know what their national holidays are, that becomes more and more of an issue.
Hmm. Okay. All right, then. Let's go on to 6. Okay. Now, Marika, would you walk us through this comment very quickly, please?
Yeah, this is Marika. This is actually something that was triggered as well by some of the comments that Luke made in relation to the STROM and also was discussed at the last meeting. So my question here is that if both parties need to inform this is in case of a settlement, so if both parties need to inform the UDRP provider in any case once a settlement is reached, would it actually make sense for the UDRP provider to confirm to the registrar that a settlement has been reached instead of the registrar having to confirm with the 2 parties that the settlement has been made? It was just a question whether that is something or whether, I don't know if that's even contradicting what the rules currently say or your UDRP itself, but I know there were some questions of how should the registrar get involved and how can the registrar make sure that, you know, they get the correct information. So that was just a suggestion and a question for the group.
Okay. Christine, you still have your hand up, so I'm going to suggest that you give us some input on this.
Yeah, actually, that was a new hand specifically for this comment. The way NAF's suspension process or stay process works is the parties notify us that they want to start to discuss settlement, so they request a stay, and they both have to request it and sign the request. And then our stay order is worded such that it allows them to just carry on and do their thing. And the case is not going to be reinstated. In fact, at the end of the stay period, the case is dismissed because we assume that the parties have reached settlement. The non-assumed position is that if the parties did not reach settlement, then they will affirmatively contact us to reinstate the case and it will go forward. So we don't actually know if there has been a settlement or not. We assume there has been if we don't hear from the parties. But once we suspend the case, we notify the registrar. We say, hey, the parties are contemplating settlement, so you may hear from them. And if you do, go ahead and allow them to transfer between them. But that's really the only involvement we have. And if we never hear from the parties again, we assume they've settled. But we don't require them to affirmatively notify us of settlement. I don't know if WIPO does things differently, but so for us, you know, we don't know if there's a settlement, so we wouldn't be able to notify the registrar if there, in fact, was a settlement or not. And I would be a little bit hesitant to insinuate ourselves into that discussion, because we have in the past had a few parties think that our job is to sort of manage the settlement or to enforce it or to make sure that the, you know, terms of the settlement are followed. And I would not want to make sure that, I would not want to have to be put in a position of having the parties think that we're somehow responsible for overseeing the settlement in any way.
Okay. Thank you, Christine. Now we have about 5 minutes, so let's see, we've got... next comment here. Oh, sorry, David, go ahead.
Thanks, Michaela. I won't go through what Christine just described again, other than just to note that there was some discussion, I think it was in last week or the week before's working group session, where we described WIPO's practice on this, and we also put some text into the chat on the mechanism that we use to notify registrars. I'll just briefly confirm, as I think Christine just did, that at least at present we do not confirm the question of whether or not there has been a settlement directly between the parties. Our view, generally speaking, is that the registrar is the one best qualified to confirm, among other things, the identity of the appropriate registrant and to confirm those arrangements where they exist. We don't step into the shoes of the panel de facto in authorising transfer in the absence of a decision, but rather we simply facilitate a process settlement where the parties appear to be looking to reach one. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Actually, I'm looking at the clock now. We really are ticking down. In terms of timelines, okay, then, we've gone through the various comments on the straw man. So what Marika will be doing in the next day or so is sending on a final version to us, and we're going to have a couple of business days. Marika, how many business days do you think is reasonable? You're going to go with 2, 3? Or are they going to be calendar days?
Maybe what we can do is give everyone until coming Wednesday to send in their final comments on the straw man. So if there are any further additions or changes, we can then discuss them on Thursday. And if not, then I can go ahead and actually pull this into the initial report. And then maybe some other updates I will may need to make to some of the other sections to reflect some of the changes we made here. And then we have Thursday basically to start looking at, you know, the latest draft of the initial report in view of trying to finalize that in time for the deadline.
Okay. Is that okay for everybody, or does somebody have a massive problem with that? Okay. Again, working on the basis that if you're silent, you agree. And I'm assuming, David, that that's an old hand.
That's a so-called vestigial, sorry.
Did you say vestigial? Oh, my God.
Isn't that the current parlance of favour on that one?
You just said parlance! Help! Okay. I'm going to blame the Swiss air and the chocolates or something. Okay, then. Yes, vestigial. Rightio, it is 1 minute to the hour. Thank you, everybody, for your time. Apologies for the delay in arriving on the call. Thank you to Alan for looking after us, even though he was eating peanut butter. And while I may not speak to you all next week, I will be interacting with you via emails and everything else. Enjoy your week. Thank you.
Thank you, Michele.